Hi. So my presentation is on women with incarcerated partners, and specifically just to look at women who have these male partners and the time between when their partner is first arrested to the time they're sentenced. So I want to look at that specific window. First, I mentioned that I have no personal, I have no disclosures. So first, let's give an understanding about incarceration of males. So we're currently in an era of mass incarceration, particularly regarding African-American males. So the overall number of prisoners in both federal and state prisons continue to rise. So we see in 2009, there were slightly more people that were incarcerated, slightly more men who were incarcerated in state or federal correctional authorities than the 5 years before in 2004. We also see that the rate of black male imprisonment is significantly higher than for non-Hispanic white males. And then with among the black males, that the rate of incarceration is highest among those between 30 and 34. And this rate, not only is it the highest among black males, but it's the highest age group across any race. So I just want to give you an understanding about the criminal justice process. So it's pretty, it's generally the same across states, but when a person is arrested, he is arrested and then arraigned, usually shortly after being arrested, and then the judge decides if the person can get bail or bond, and if they are able to get bonded, they're able to go back into the community until their trial date. However, if the judge either decides not to give a bond, or if their person is not able to make the bond, they remain in custody until they are sentenced. And then the sentencing happens, and then the person goes, and they are found guilty, they go through the incarceration, and then they make a parole at a later time. So once again, I want to look at this period between the arrest and sentencing. So the time between sentencing is becoming longer. So I get information, the latest information from the source book of criminal justice. And this table illustrates that the percentage of those who are charged with felonies are facing increased delays in being sentenced. So for instance, in 2002, 22% of those charged with a felony, any offense, had not been sentenced at one year after they were arrested. But by 2006, 33% people had not been sentenced at the one-year mark. So this can be important because this is taking people out of the community. So if, for instance, low-income people may not be able to make the bond, you're actually removing them from the community. And so since 1980, before the war on drugs, that there has been over 1,000 increase, 1,100% increase in the number of people who are incarcerated for drug-related offenses. And African Americans are disproportionately represent a majority of these charges. So incarceration affects not only those who have been arrested and inmates, but also affects their families and friends. So incarceration can affect their partners, their children, and their significant others. And previous studies have estimated that approximately 50% of those incarcerated men consider themselves to be in a committed heterosexual relationship and intend to continue the relationship after release. And research conducted on partner incarceration, primarily focused on heterosexual relationships, has shown that the female partners left in the community experience increased financial, instrumental, such as transportation, emotional, and parenting burdens. So many women with incarcerated partners report feelings of disempowerment, loneliness, helplessness, and isolation. So seeing this information presented about the incarceration rates of males as well as the burdens on their partners, I wanted to know how does this uncertainty of the time between arrest and the sentencing, how does that lead to increased burdens on the female partners? So the research questions I wanted to look at for this analysis is how does uncertainty about the incarcerated partners relate to continuing the relationship? How does it relate to the female's partner ability to get her life back on track? And what coping mechanisms do the women use during this period to deal with the period of uncertainty? So I work with Project RISE, a study conducted at the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory, and the study is designed, it's a qualitative study that is designed to explore the processes through which the incarceration of a primary male partner shapes the women's emotional status, their economic status, drug use, social status, and children welfare. So to be eligible, the women had to be African American, live in Atlanta, Georgia, and have a primary male partner who had recently been incarcerated. So we use quota sampling to create a sample of both drug-using and non-drug-using women. And like I said before, there's a lot of African-American men who are being arrested for drug-related charges. And a lot of these men also have drug-using behaviors before and after they are incarcerated. So we really want to try to get a sample of the drug-using women to see what is their experience any different from non-drug-using women. So the participants were recruited from visiting centers at Atlanta area jails, drug treatment centers, women's shelters, and other community centers. The women participated in four waves of one-on-one semi-structured interviews over a year to explore changes over time. So only women whose partner had not been sentenced at wave one were included in this analysis. And the data covering domains related to relationship qualities before incarceration, their emotional well-being, the coping strategies they've used, and the future relationship expectations were analyzed using grounded theory methods. So this sample only uses the experiences of seven women, just because there was only a smaller number of women who had gone through, whose partner hasn't been sentenced at wave one. But the total sample size for the study was 32 women. And I just want to make sure you understand that the results presented are preliminary, and we will continue this analysis. So one of the things, to answer the first question about the reasons the women continue their relationship status with their partner, is that there's many factors that go into this relationship. So one of the main things that the women repeatedly mentioned was the quality of relationship before incarceration. So for this one participant, she says, because I believe what he was telling me, and I trust him, and I do love him, and I just won't walk away. And there's a lot of qualities about him that I like and that I came to respect. So as opposed to other men I've seen, dated, and even been married to, that I saw in him, and even with establishing a relationship with my children. So I'm willing to wait. Another factor is expectations post-incarceration. So once the male partner is back in the community, she says, when he's out, I know what it's going to be like. I'm going to be happy. He's going to be happy. He's going to take care of his baby. I'm not going to have to pay you for all this high daycare and stuff like that. He'll take care of him, and he'll do what he has to do, and I'll do, you know, what I have to do, and bam. And the third factor that goes into maintaining a relationship was the length of their partner's sentence. So most of the women in our study that I looked at in this analysis had decided to continue their relationship with the incarcerated partner. But this could either be as a primary male partner, as a secondary partner, so they were starting a relationship with someone in the community and that person was going to become their primary partner, or just as a supportive friend, someone they can give emotional support to or even financial support to while he's in jail or prison. So the women who decide to stay with their partner, no matter the sentence outcome, often discuss their loyalty to him, the fear of deserting him, that if she did not continue contact with him, that there was going to be no one else to financially support him or give him the emotional support that he needs during this time. And they also discuss the lack of other good men, other lack of other men who would treat her as good. So the quote before, when she says at the top for the quality of relationship, really demonstrates also that, you know, opposed to other men or even dated, she came to respect him more than any other men she's been with. So there were some women who were uncertain about continuing a relationship because of the possibility of a long sentence. So women often mention the if game. So if he gets X amount of time, I'm willing to wait. Otherwise, we'll have to break up. And so this participant, she says, if he has to do 10 years, I wrote him. I told him, I think we should take a break and pick up where we left off when you get out, because I'm going to be damn near 30. Like I said, we just pick it up where we left off. So she still wants to have some relationship, but the length of time she's not able to do if he gets more than 10 years. So the second question I had was the women's ability to get back on track. And so it refers to the extent to which the women feel they have the control to gain stability in their life, either through found employment and housing. It's not really the the actual getting their life on track, so finding a job and finding housing, but the perceived control they have, they feel that they can do so. So this ranges from a lack of control, so feeling stuck and having her life controlled by others, to feeling completely able, having like a sense of motivation. So one participant said, it's been really hard. I feel like I just lost the best friend. He's like he's stopping my future because I don't want to do too much because I don't want to feel like I'm leaving him. And I don't want to feel like I left him. An example, I wanted to go to the military. He said that's fine, but he'd rather wait to see how much time he's going to have or if I can wait on him to do it. So some women actually felt that their partner's incarceration had little to no effect on her ability to get back on track. And usually these women were not receiving any type of financial support from their partner or nor were living with him before he was incarcerated. So a lot of these women were in school or had a stable job and stable income or receiving money from other people. So the one participant says, I have other things going on as far as school and personal things in my life that just keep me going. So I don't feel like I'm putting my life on hold for him. But I do have the naysayers that say, you know, he's gone for 20 years or he's gone for life. And, you know, but I try to ignore that because we can't say. We haven't went through that far yet, so we haven't got to the part in this case yet. So the third thing I want to look at is the coping mechanism that these women use during this time of uncertainty. So preliminary analysis found that the women often reported various methods of coping. So the most popular coping mechanism the women reported was substance use. So this one participant says when she thinks about her partner being away and thinks about the uncertainty regarding the case, she says, like, when I'm frustrated, I roll up a blunt, marijuana. Even when I'm hungry, I roll up a blunt. And I won't even eat because I was used to getting up cooking for him in the morning. So she had gotten into the routine of in the morning of cooking for him, but now that he's gone is a constant reminder. And so to cope, she smokes marijuana. Another popular coping mechanism was turning to one's faith. She says, I never used drugs or drunk alcohol, so, you know, it's not a desire for me, so I don't need to go to another substance. I find my strength through God, family, friends, and, you know, the other emotional support. I'm pretty a strong person. And so other mechanisms that the women reported was sleeping, either not sleeping or sleeping, eating, not eating, or eating more, and turning to to other support systems, either informal, so their friends or family, or formal sources such as counseling sessions. And this one quote really kind of demonstrates that. She says she's turning to food, and when she gets stressed out, she goes to food and eat, listen to music, or just cry and fall asleep watching movies. And then she talks about how it's hard sometimes because she has to put her needs aside when she's stressed because her partner will call, and he's in DeKalb County Jail in the Atlanta area, and he only has an hour, so he wants to take advantage of it. So I can't just say, I don't want to talk to you. It's not about if I want to talk to you. If I want to talk to him, it's not about if I want to talk to him. If he wants to find out what's happened with the lawyer or what's happening with his case or anything he wants to know, I have to tell him, you know. So she's really putting aside her own needs to take care of him. And that is a reoccurring theme throughout not just this period of the women I'm looking at, but across the entire study. And an interesting something I really didn't initially think when I was starting this analysis was that women also said that they felt the most relief when they were receiving letters and phone calls to their partners, as well as when they were visiting him. However, as you can imagine, the relief periods were brief, and as soon as the contact ended, the women reported new waves of sadness. So before I really go into the conclusions, I want to talk about some of the limitations of this analysis. So one, this is a qualitative study with relatively small sample. Again, I said there's only seven women. So only seven women fit the criteria to be included in this analysis. However, the analysis was informed by other women in the study reflecting about this time period. The results are not generalizable, and we only analyzed the wave one interviews. So we have three more interviews to analyze. The inclusion criteria required that women have a primary partner who was incarcerated. Therefore, women who chose to participate may be fundamentally different from those who did not, as well as the findings needed to be evaluated over time. So, as a conclusion, just looking at some of the results presented, that during this period of intense uncertainty, sentencing is a salient time for deciding whether to continue the relationship. The women reported that their life was off track felt that their life was on hold until the outcome of the incarcerated partner's sentence was known. However, women who were stable before incarceration felt less financial and housing instability or reported more emotional strain. And to cope with the sudden loss of their partner as well as the uncertainty of his outcome, the women reported using various coping mechanisms to deal. So what does this mean? So I think some of the next steps that need to be performed is perform further analysis to determine how these findings change over time, as well as develop interventions to identify and promote positive coping mechanisms to female partners during this period of uncertainty. Someone has to cope. Everyone has to cope, but we need to find the positive ways that these women can, not using substance use and maybe relying more on family and other support systems. We also need to develop policy to reduce the amount of time between arrest and sentencing to lessen the emotional and financial burdens on the female partners. So they give my acknowledgement to the women in Project Rise as well as to our funders. Thank you.